Hi FM, your station of choice since 2008.
Good morning. How are you?
Very well, thank you, Dr. Howard.
Excellent. So here's the thing. This whole space race business yesterday. Well, not just yesterday. I mean, this has been going on and on. Is there a reason scientifically that they have to shape these rockets the way they are shaping these rockets? It makes me a bit uncomfortable, I have to say.
What sort of shape are you referring to? You mean wind resistance?
It could be that, but the fact that I can tell that this rocket is not Jewish bothers me, if you know what I mean.
Right. Well, there are aerodynamic advantages related to stability as the rocket goes up to have that little bulge at the end. That was with regard to the Jeff Bezos rocket, whereas the Virgin plane was more like a conventional plane, but with a weird set of wings that actually come up like a little shuttlecock thing at the back end to slow it down. They each get up to about Mach 3. It's basically you're being driven here by aerodynamics, and anything else is just an unfortunate coincidence.
All right, so there you have it. There you have it. It doesn't say anything about what the millionaires or billionaires want to show us. Let's just talk about it, and I'm very, very interested in this question. Is one accidental side effect of the COVID pandemic is a worldwide drop in asthma? Please tell me about this.
Yes, it's the weirdest thing. So just before we went into the whole COVID-19 thing, an American group of medical researchers had set up a fund, set up a campaign, especially among Afro-Americans and more so Hispanic Latinos, who are very prone to having asthma. And asthma is a nasty disease. It can kill roughly 300,000 people every year, and it affects about a quarter of a billion people around the planet. And so they set up this whole survey with regard to self-treatment, and blow me down, COVID hit, and they had these people already giving them the data for 18 months before, and now they had a perfect sample opportunity to keep on testing, and they found that many of the emergency symptoms that happen with asthma dropped by up to 40%, and they don't really know why. Part of the background is that you've got to understand this, asthma is not a disease. Now, that's probably something you're not familiar with, like a fever is not a disease. Right. You can have a fever as a result of pneumonia or a leg infection.
So in and of itself, it's not a disease, is what you're saying.
That's right. Okay. So there are about 17 different separate conditions that lead to the same end result, like a fever, but in this case, difficulty in breathing out air due to narrowing of the lungs. And that's part of the reason. We have so many different treatments. So salbutamol will work for this person, but inhaled steroids for that person. And so you go, because we're dealing with a bunch of different diseases. And what we found was that some of our previous thoughts about what was a major determinator for asthma, we need to rethink them. And this has been, unfortunately, some good has come out of this whole COVID thing. Well, not unfortunately, thank heaven, some good came out of it. We're now learning to think about asthma more to reduce it, because it is a terrible disease. In Australia alone, about 1,000 people die each year, most of them healthy young people. In the United States, 3,500 die, and they don't have to die. So thanks to this COVID-19 thing, we fell this 40% drop in emergency hospital admissions, and we're trying to find out why.
Really, really interesting. I know. I remember I had a conversation with somebody who was doing research in the United States around asthma, and the group that he was studying was a group called the Cochinchina Jews, so Jews that had lived in Cochin for many generations, and they didn't suffer from asthma until they left Cochin, and then went to various parts of the world, and then asthma became quite prolific. But what was interesting for him was that he had the before before and the after people to study. So he could look at it very much like what you're saying here. Very, very interesting indeed. Linda says, good morning, Mayhem Team Howard. Is it behavior that has caused the flooding in Europe and China? Is it the volcanoes in Indonesia and Iceland, the icy weather that we are having? Is this human behavior?
It's a combination of factors. One is that we seem to value a dead tree more than a living tree. And so in Australia, trees 10 metres tall end up getting sold and generating for the government of Australia 50 cents per tree. Hmm. That's all the government makes out of it, 50 cents. And the trees do enormous benefit in doing stuff for the soil. So that's one factor. But the other major factor is climate change. And in fact, it was the floodings back in 1973 in Europe that alerted the largest reinsurance company in the whole world, Munich Re, to the fact that the thing that they called back then the greenhouse effect, now we call it climate change, was causing a change in the floodings. So definitely land clearing and human behavior, but in the background, human behavior directly affecting climate and then causing the floodings. That's the other factor.
Is this something that we can expect to see more and more of?
Yes, and it's going to get worse. What we've got at the moment is that out of the 45 million people who die worldwide each year, roughly one-fifth die because of air pollution from burning fossil fuels.
Wow.
And they don't have to die. And at no stage do the fossil fuel companies say, look, we're really sorry that the dirty air killed your relative. Here's a check for $20,000 to cover the loss of the expenses and the funeral and everything. They don't do any of that. So to answer the question, yes, the floods are due to a combination of human activity. Basically human activity, yes. All of it.
Right. Very, very frightening. Is it true that the food that we are growing today is less nutritious than food that maybe our parents or our grandparents would eat?
No, on average. So what is claimed is that the food has lost 90% of its nutrients as compared to what our grandparents had. And we've got a few studies, and looking at the really good studies, they show that the nutrient levels have gone down over the last half century in roughly half the foods by about 6 to 30%. But the main driver of that is not that the soil has less nutrients in it, but rather the farmers choosing a variety of food crop that is balanced for the maximum number of tons per hectare, plus resistance to disease, plus adapting with the local climate, and nutrient levels is not one of the things that they look for. And it's the variety. So if you look at, say, tomatoes, out of the 100 different varieties of tomatoes, vitamin C level can vary by a factor of 3. For beans, calcium levels can vary by a factor of 2. And at broccoli, a nutrient can vary by a factor of 10. So we need to bring in tax laws to make it more profitable for the farmers to grow foods with the higher nutrient values. So they're slightly down, but it's basically due to them being forced to pick what gives them the greatest profit, not what's best for the consumer.
I think what is also worth remembering at times like this is certainly if I think about my grandparents who lived in Europe and great-grandparents, they didn't always have access to a full range of foods anyway. So the truth is that even if that was the case, that some of our fruit and vegetables weren't as nutritious as they were back then, we certainly have access to enormous varieties of food today.
And that's a very good point that you've raised there, Dr. Howard, because today nutritional deficiencies are relatively uncommon, providing you're not desperately poor.
Right.
So it's not so much the foods themselves that are driving nutritional deficiencies, but rather the injustice of a system where a person doesn't have access to a wide range of different foods that over a period of a week or a month will give them all the nutrients they need.
And it's actually interesting because today happens also to be junk food day. And some of the research says that lower income people eat more junk food than affluent people. And this obviously impacts as well on nutrition. Talking about nutrition, we don't have a lot of time, but I do want to ask you this question. Tell us about flat pack pasta.
It's the weirdest thing. So if you look at pasta, about 60% of the volume of the box is air because the pasta is folded into a sheet or a spiral or a saddle shape. And some people have been thinking about this. And by the way, real Italian pasta is made only from water and semolina flour and nothing else. So what they've been doing is realizing that the water, when you boil it, is absorbed through the surface, and so they've cut grooves in the surface less than a millimeter across, and you can have this packet of dead flat pasta like you get from an IKEA store or something, and you bring out the flat pasta, put it in the water, and it takes on a shape, and then suddenly you've reduced the packaging by 50% or so. I don't know why people didn't think about it earlier.
That is the funniest thing. I like the concept of IKEA-shaped pasta or IKEA-packed pasta. It comes with instructions. Dr. Carl, thank you. As always, it's just an absolute delight speaking to you.